One possibility was that dissolved aromatic compounds from oil might have harmful effects on fish embryos or fish development at much lower levels of concentration than previously believed. If so, the toxic compounds might create defects in young fish that could be difficult to detect through clinical observation because the fish wouldn't necessarily all die of the same cause. Their weakened condition might play out in an ocean environment over the fish's lifetime in varied and unpredictable ways. As evidence emerged to support this hypothesis, one of the scientists working with Short, Ron Heinz, had an inspiration. Auk Bay could set up its own pink salmon hatchery, expose embryos and young fish to varying levels of oil, send the fish out to sea, and count their mortality rates 2 years later, when they reliably return to their birthplace.
"Here's an idea," Short exclaimed when he heard the proposal. "We should do that."
It was an expensive and risky experiment by government standards, more than $500,000. But they won approval in 1996. Over the next several springs, Auk Bay's scientists and their collaborators tagged tens of thousands of pink salmon and then counted and examined the fish as they returned. This work produced a significant scientific discovery. Dissolved or exposed oil did have a sublethal toxic effect at levels of concentration many hundreds of times lower than previous research had suggested was dangerous. The scientists could not initially explain why oil caused elevated mortality rates if embryos were exposed, only that it did. Later research by other scientists showed that oil exposure could damage a fish's heart as it developed, which in turn damaged the circulation system and sometimes produced early death. The Auk Bay scientists later found the same effect when they studied herring and cod embryos. Other scientists would reproduce the results with zebrafish and mummichogs. The damage caused by oil exposure did not seem to be passed down from one generation of fish to the next, however. At least, Jeffrey Short's team could not demonstrate such an intergenerational effect. Salmon populations steadily recovered in Prince William Sound after the initial disruptions. The single-generation effects of oil toxicity meant ExxonMobil was probably off the hook for further financial damages on that score. Still, as a result of the Auk Bay's post-Valdez work, the underlying science about the dangers of oil spills to marine environments had been revised, at least in the opinion of the NOAA team and other scientists who reviewed and duplicated their findings. This might influence the environmental liabilities of ExxonMobil and other oil corporations when other spills occurred. It was a really unexpected and pretty profound change in how scientists viewed oil toxicity, Short said. As the team's work was published, ExxonMobil began to fund competing studies using other methodologies and sample sizes. All of the studies the corporation supported challenged the premise that oil was dangerous in the way that the NOAA team suggested. ExxonMobil employed many chemists in its refinery and research divisions. Its scientists did not dispute the notion that certain aromatic compounds, such as benzene, toluene, and xylene, could be dangerous to living beings. However, ExxonMobil did not accept the finding by the NOAA scientists that dissolved oil present in a natural breeding ground might harm embryo development, even after the Auk Bay's original salmon study was replicated and extended to other species. The corporation's resistance and argumentation did not particularly bother Short once the confirming studies came in. "I think in the wider scientific community, we've won that battle, because other people have independently replicated it and figured out the biochemical mechanisms underlying it. And in fact, there's some really elegant work done by people who are not us. So they can have that position if they like, but most people think it's flawed." In 1999, to memorialize the 10th anniversary of the Exxon Valdez spill, reporters and camera crews descended on Prince William Sound. ExxonMobil spokespeople emphasized that the Sound's beaches were free of oil, as was true at least on the surface, and that wildlife in the region had recovered, as was also true, generally speaking. And yet some area residents claimed that they had accidentally set a few oiled Prince William Sound beaches on fire while camping. Dave Janka, an independent boat owner, had discovered beaches around Night Island where he could easily dig beneath the rocks and find pockets of fresh oil. Where had the oil come from? Was it left over from the Valdez? During the 10th anniversary season, Janka ferried media crews to those beaches and helped the reporters dig out handfuls of oil to show their audiences. There was a considerable range of opinion about whether Prince William Sound remained burdened by submerged Valdez oil, Jeffrey Short recalled. So around the time of the anniversary, he proposed a study to actually measure how much oil was on the beach, which had never been done before and was widely viewed as impossible. Given the findings about oil's sublethal effects, if the oil was still around the sound, hidden, it might pose persistent dangers.